Now, we are moving on to talk to Michelle Worthington. Michelle Worthington is a children's author and screenwriter. And Michelle, first of all, welcome to the program. Compliments of the season. And you're here to talk about some great books that we should get our kids to read over the summer break.
That's exactly right. Thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. And I think this is a terrific topic. I really do, because I know I'm a bit old-fashioned in these things, but to get kids off, the gaming stuff and texting and getting them to read real books, I think is a wonderful idea. Do you think it'll be a success?
I hope so. I think there are definitely things that parents can do to make books a viable option these school holidays.
So how do they wean them off what would be their normal leisure pursuits?
Well, one of the first things, and not all parents are going to like this, is that you actually have to model reading a book for your kids. So you can't sit on your phone and then yell at your kids for being on their phone. So find a book that you love, show them that you can sit down and do that as a pastime for you, and then kids are more likely to pick up a book themselves.
Yeah, do parents read books to their kids at bedtime still? I mean, I know they always used to.
The latest study shows that less than 1 in 4 Aussie kids are getting read bedtime stories, which is a really sad statistic. Most of the time, either parents are too tired or they're too time poor and they just give their kids an iPad. So there are definitely ways that kids can still get exposure to stories using their iPad. There's YouTube channels like Fairy Bell the Book Fairy, but it just doesn't replace the time that you spend reading to your kids and the connection that that makes.
Well, Joe has still got his mouth agape out there, our producer, when you said 1 in 4. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's even getting less than that. So it could potentially be more than that in the latest statistics.
Yeah, well, we've got to do something to rectify that. I'm not sure what it is. Do we march on Parliament, demand that parents read stories to their kids? Doesn't necessarily have to be at bedtime, but, gosh, that's a part of parenting that's just gone by the board. That's very, very sad if that's the case. I'd like to put that out amongst our listeners. Do you read stories to your kids? Doesn't have to be at night, doesn't have to be any particular age. If you do, give us a call and restore our faith in humanity, basically. 1-333-882, and you can have a chat to Michelle as well. Yeah, I'm a bit stunned by that, but look, let's move on. What makes a good book for kids, and particularly over this period?
I think parents still have a precedence to the type of books that they read when they were young. So we've all got those favourite books that we loved, and a lot of times the parents will buy those books for the kids. But we've got a new generation of kids that's growing up in a whole new world. So the trick is to find a book that your kid is going to be interested in. See what sort of things that they like, and then find a book that matches that. And it only takes one good book to hook a kid to be a reader for life.
Yeah, and of course, I suppose you can get advice from bookstores about which particular book is suitable for a child of a particular age, or maybe, you know, books that appeal more to young fellas than appeal to young ladies and vice versa. I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, I was into the Biggles books and the Jennings books and those sort of things. I wasn't that wrapped in the Secret Seven or those sort of things, but are those sort of genres still around?
They are. So you would have heard at the beginning of this year that there was big controversy on publishers trying to re-edit those books and make them more modern by changing some of the language in them. Because if you read some of the books, especially like Blinky Bill, there is some content in there that maybe modern kids might not understand. And reading it from a new context as a younger audience, like, I do not agree with them changing the classics. I think they are what they were written, and you need to kind of read them within the context. But the best thing that you can do is take your kids to the library and give them free rein. The library is one of the last places on the planet that it doesn't cost any money to go to.
True.
And you can just let your kids go and have the agency to pick up books, even if they are higher than maybe their potential reading age. It's all got to do with what is it that fires their imagination and letting them have access to those books.
Yeah, look, we all believe in political correctness to a certain extent, but I'm with you, and I mean, Enid Blyton, the language in her books, the politically correct police would probably not approve of some of the characters that she highlighted in her books.
Yes, and it's been changed many times, which is so sad. I still have all my original Enid Blyton collection. I'm so proud of it. I've got all of my Anne of Green Gables. I've got all of my Trixie Belden. Like, books are something to treasure, and I think we've got to initiate that in the young people that, you know, books are something that you can hold on to for your whole life and revisit like old friends.
Now, tell us about the Premier Summer Reading Challenge. What is that all about?
So every state will have a reading challenge, and they'll have a list of suggested books on there for kids, and they can actually keep a list of the books that they've read either during school or over the holidays, and they'll get a certificate and a prize for reading. And a lot of libraries do this as well. The difference with the libraries is there's not a set reading list. Kids can read whatever they want, but it's just something to show that reading is a habit. Reading is something that we kind of have to learn how to do and regularly do. And once we get into the habit, it's a lot easier just to keep going.
Is there commonality between the lists that the various states put out, or are they quite individual? I would have thought that there'd be some commonality, surely. Kids are kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's the most popular books, like for the younger kids, Mr. Impopable by Trent Jameson and Brent Wilson is on nearly all of the reading lists because it's just so fun. My youngest son is 9 and he said he loves this book because it tickles the inside of his brain. And it's just funny and clever, and it's just a really great book. And I do suggest that one as well if you've got some reluctant readers. And then for the older kids, we've got these Treehouse storybooks, which are by Andy Griffiths and Trent Denton. And the great thing about that, it's a series and there's like a gazillion of them. So once the kids are hooked into one book, they want to read the next book and the next book and the next book. And I think that's a really great way that you can get kids into reading consistently, not just one book and then go back to their iPad.
Yeah. Michelle, we've got a text here from Roz. Parents need to spend time just being with their children and giving them full attention. Look, echoing what you're saying, try taking them to the library, let them choose a book and set aside a time each day for reading together. And that comes from Roz. She says that's from a nana. I reckon that makes eminent sense.
Absolutely. And if you think about when you were read to as a child, sometimes it wasn't even about the book. You probably just had a shower, you'd had dinner, you were safe and warm. And maybe for the first time that day, your most loved parent was giving you undivided attention. And I think that is what bedtime stories are about. And that's what we're losing in Australian society. And that's why I'm so passionate about getting it back.
Yeah, indeed. Now, let's move on to your screenwriting, the screenwriting side of things. Tell us about that.
So in 2020, when all of my school visits got cancelled, all of my international engagements got cancelled for kids, I actually kind of taught myself how to do screenwriting, and I absolutely love it because I think it's another way that we can introduce Aussie kids to Aussie stories. And I've started writing a couple of TV series and movies that have won awards internationally. And we've just had our latest award actually at the Paris International Film Awards. So I'm really excited about this new chapter and how we can also translate those stories for Aussie kids. Because if you have a look at TV at the moment, a lot of the stories for kids are from overseas. Like Bluey has done amazing things for the Australian children's television industry. We need to kind of piggyback that and make sure we've got lots and lots of Australian stories that kids can see themselves in.
Yeah, look, you make a lot of sense, Michelle, and you've really added some dimension to our program this morning. There's no question of that. And I'm sure it's food for thought for our listeners, and we'd love them to react to what you've said. And I don't think there'd be too many people would disagree with anything that you've said. Thank you so much for your time. All the best for 2024, Michelle.
Thank you, and have a happy new year.
You too. Michelle Worthington, children's author and screenwriter. What do you think about some of the concepts that Michelle has raised?